But we couldn't communicate, as in this part of the Andes the natives speak their own Quechua dialect. I stood there for a while, wondering how the sign he got there. Then, deciding it was far too cold to be reading and asking questions about a stupid flying saucer sign on top of a mountain, I took off again on the motorcycle, which seemed a lot more fun. It was early afternoon when I arrived back in Agaya. The medicinal baths beckoned. My whole being vibrated with all kinds of beautiful feelings. The balmy weather, enticing me to swim outdoors, made me feel even better. In spite of the high altitude, the noon sunshine was warm enough to dry my damp skin, so instead of toweling myself dry, I stretched out on the grass, hoping to get a suntan. I lay there feeling wonderful and at peace. Suddenly, the silence was broken by the sound of a powerful motorcycle approaching. I raised my head at the comsoft hyphen motion and saw, at a distance, the shape of a Harley Davidson, the type American patrolman use. It was too far away for me to make out the driver. My appetite for lunch overcame my curiosity. I got up and started walking towards the hotel dining room. As I approached the hotel, the cycle came nearer and I saw that the new arrival was a girl, and she was indeed riding a black and white police bike, complete with red lights, radio, antenna, and all the paraphernalia for police work in the United States. Unable to control my curiosity, I went right up to the bike. I was stunned to see the LAPD seal on the gasoline tank. The bike's driver, a very petite young woman, was heading toward one of the bathhouses nearby. She didn't look very friendly, so I hesitated to approach her. But seeing a Los Angeles Police Department motorcycle high in the Andes Mountains, about 11,000 miles from Hollywood, Los Angeles, Long Beach, or whatever division that bike came from, was enough to overcome my reluctance. I walked up to her and asked, "How in the world did you manage to get that bike all the way here?" "Oh, I have ways," she replied noncommittally. "Didn't the Peruvian customs officials question you when you brought it into this country?" "Well, actually, they didn't see the way it came into this country." "How did you smuggle it in, then?" "That's a long story," she answered, "and even if I told you, you'd probably never believe me. Try me, I'm open," I coaxed. "To answer that, we'd have to chat for the next few days," she said mysteriously. I gathered from this brief conversation that she was a well-educated American girl, more or less in her twins' soft hyphen ties. She had fair skin, a very pretty face and long black hair. She was wearing jeans, hiking boots, a Swiss Army shirt, and a heavy army coat with synthetic fur around the hood. Her appearance was pleasant, but for some reason, I immediately judged she was one of those American hippie potheads who roam around the world hitchhiking and asking for spare change. I asked my questions cautiously, but she remained aloof, answering with a mischievous smile and a soft-tearless expression. There was something strange about her eyes that I found disturbing, but I couldn't quite figure out what it was. Since she didn't appear very willing to talk about the police bike, I changed the subject. "Are you with the Peace Corps?" "No," she answered simply. "Then you must be with the CIA." "No," she said emphatically, "I am certainly not with the CIA." "Are you an American?" "No." My patience running out, I decided to end this brief conversation. I started to walk away. She stopped me with a question. "You'd really like to know, wouldn't you?" "As a matter of fact, I would." "Okay, what would you like to know?" "First, how did you get that bike away from the fuzz?" "Oh, that was easy. One day a few friends and I were driving on the Hollywood Freeway in California, mind soft-hyphening our own business, when a policeman comes up my first UFOs behind us and gets us out of the car at gunpoint, for no reason whatsoever. We didn't appreciate this one bit and, with our combined efforts, some persuasion and charm, we managed to leave him handcuffed with his own cuffs to a freeway pole. We took the motorcycle as a souvenir of sunny California. You really expect me to believe that?" "Why not? What reason would I have to lie to you?" "You're the one who wants to talk, not me," she said, annoyed. "I beg your pardon," I said sarcastically, "I didn't mean to offend you, but I come from a city where one meets a lot of nuts who say some far-out things to get attention. Her eyes looked at me steadily. She certainly didn't look like a nut. Anyway, I continued, who is this we you keep talking about? We are a few friends. We travel around the world bringing the word of God. Oh, you're one of those Jesus freaks. No, I'm not a Jesus freak. Oh no? You just bring the word of God by stealing motorcycles from poor, defenseless policemen, right? Not really. Things like that happen only when we encounter too much interference with the purpose of our mission. And what, pray tell, is your mission? To save humanity, she said without a trace of embarrassment. What's the name of your group? There is no name and we teach no religion or dogmatic creeds. Just the plain love of God. Are you some kind of missionary? Yeah, I guess you could consider me a missionary. Soft hyphen in your language. What do you mean by in your language? By the way, you haven't even told me where you come from? In due time, and by in your language I mean that when someone brings teachings and guidance, he or she is called a missionary, a guide, a teacher, you name it, a hermit, a guru. You enjoy being mysterious, don't you? Let's say cautious. Well, I said, exasperated. If we're going to play what's my line or some guessing game. No, we're not going to play any games. If you have a few minutes to spare, we may come up with some intelligent conversation, though. You don't need to be a genius to understand what I teach, just a little logic, an open mind, some general knowledge and the willingness to understand. I imagine you must have some kind of religious belief. I interrupted her irritably. None, I have none. I don't have any religious or political affiliations. I'm a people lover and consider myself a citizen of the world. I don't even believe in international boundaries. Very good, but what about your religious upbringing? Soft hyphening. Some of it you must still remember, I imagine. My religious education was a tough one. Both very Jewish and Roman Catholic. I've learned to be rebellious, materialistic, mean, cruel and to have this terrible guilt about the natural functions of being alive. Like making out, masturbating, even having a girlfriend. You have no idea how much I had to go through to get rid of all the guilt. I abandoned both the church and the synagogue. My last time there was when I was 13. I haven't been back since, and I don't intend to return, either. That's how I feel about religion. I get the creeps every time I remember how I had to listen to all that church stuff. I'm a promiscuous character, and both of my religions made me feel dirty for even thinking about sex. Since I sincerely enjoy my sexual freedom, I figured it was better not to worry about religion at all. My first UFOs I warmed to the subject, which gave me a chance to vent my feelings. When I lived with my father I had to attend a school run by priests and nuns. Some places it meant parochial school or no school at all. There are some countries in this world where the whole national education program is in the hands of the Vatican. I guess now you can understand why I'm so fed up with religion. Splendid. She cheered. Her response surprised me. What do you mean by that? I don't consider what I've gone through Splinsoft hyphen did. Don't be angry, she said. You seem like a bright fellow. You must be the type of person who understands things that can be reasoned at a logical level, right? You're darned right, I said indignantly. But coming from a world where everything is a rat race, including religion, both faith and spiritualism are out. Soft-shilism is in. The almighty buck is the general creed, and the most powerful god. Religion is sold on the streets and in the news media, Times Square, Inches, New York, Hollywood Boulevard, in Los Angeles, North Beach in San Francisco, via Veneto in Rome, Piccadilly and Oxford Circus in London, Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen, Brussels, Paris, Amsterdam, and in any downtown any soft-where you find them, your Krishnas singing and dancing, Jehovah's Witnesses, Salvation Armies, Miss Soft-Sceneries, preachers and you Jesus freaks selling Jesus as if he were a piece of meat. Handing out, selling, hustling literature, telling people doomsday is near. And always asking for a handout. I've traveled all over this blasted world, and I find them no matter where I go. And each step of the way I feel like saying, get out of my way. I think you're right, she said coolly. But take it easy. Don't get so excited. You're supposed to be resting here, right? You mean you agree with me? Well, I certainly do. I was ready to continue loudly voicing my outrage when something stopped me. From behind one of the mountains, out of the clear blue sky, three slow-moving flying objects appeared, perfectly lined in a triangular formation. As I watched, they suddenly stopped in mid-air. I forgot what I was about to say, fascinated with the sight of the oblong objects shaped like two soup dishes put together against each other. They had little humps on the top. While they were hovering over the man's soft hyphen tanes, I noticed they were metallic in color, something like aluminum. I also saw a glowing amber-orange color that changed to green, almost turquoise. They began moving soundlessly, traveling in different directions. At times their horizontal movements changed to vertical, then hovered in mid-air. Suddenly, with a great burst of speed, they took off, disappearing into the sky. When this happened, I heard a small explosion. I was thunderstruck. I didn't know what to make of the situation. My mind went totally blank. It's hard to describe my feelings upon realizing that one is actually seeing something from outer space. I flashed back to the UFO contact sign at the Ticlio Pass. I turned to my new acquaintance and saw her smiling. She seemed amused by the sighting, and not at all surprised. I said, "Those things weren't airplanes or helicopters." "Yeah, I know," she said calmly. "They're flying saucers." I could hardly believe my eyes. Yet, when she reacted to seeing them so casually, I told her I was impressed by her calm attitude. "Of course I'm calm," she said. "I see them all the time. They're all over the world. I never believed those things existed. What do you think now?" "Wow, I don't know what to say. I can tell you a lot about flying saucers," she said. "I'm an expert on the matter." I became suspicious. "Are you sure you're not with the CIA?" I asked. "I know a lot of people who claim to be with the Peace Corps, but they're nothing but CIA agents. Don't worry about it. I'm not." Her know-it-all attitude began to irritate me. "What could you tell me about UFOs?" "Listen," she said, looking at me directly, "if you have sincere desire to know about UFOs, and all their related matter, why don't you meet me here tomorrow? If you have an open mind, a little simple logic, and some common sense, I can assure you one pleasant day. By the way, bring a Bible." "A Bible?" I asked incredulously. "Yes, if you want to know about flying saucers, the Bible is the place to go. There's a lot of evidence of flying objects in its pages." "You have to be kidding." "No, I am not." "Look," I said, exasperated, "I've just told you how I feel about religious nuts and Jesus freaks. I thought by coming into this part of the Andes Mountains I would be getting away from them. But I can see that you people have taken over these mountains as well." "First of all," she said patiently, "let me make it clear that I am not a Jesus freak or a religious fanatic. I won't tell you anything you don't want to believe. If I ask you to bring a Bible, it is mainly for academic purposes, not religious ones." "All right," I said, "I'll listen to what you have to say. If it makes any sense, I'll be open to it. I still think you're kooky. But I also think there's more to you than meets the eye. Try to be here around noon or thereabouts." She picked up her canvas bag and walked down to the bathhouse, and I went up towards the hotel. I waited around until I was sure she was in the water, then walked over to the Harley-Davidson and examined it closely. I had done some work at MGM Studios in Hollywood, and I remembered seeing police motorcycles like the ones used for the television show, Chips. They looked pretty much like this one. I opened the pouch over the back wheel. It contained an LAPD traffic citations pad, flares, and a few more items associated with police work. I was convinced the bike was for real. I walked back to where I had parked Richard's Honda and lay down on the grass by the river, staring up at the clear sky, hoping to see some more flying saucers. I began musing about the UFO contact sign. It meant something after all. And now this girl tells me that I can find evidence of flying saucers in the Bible. And that she had come to bring the word of God. I started laughing. Here I was in some godforsaken place in the Andes Mountains of Peru, going to spend my Sunday with some hippie girl reading the Bible. Well, I rationalized, I was already here, my previous plans ruined. At least now I had an adventure to look forward to. I had to admit I was fascinated by anyone with the audacity to leave a cop handcuffed to a roadside pole on a California freeway and take his motorbike. She had to be an interesting character. Besides, I consoled myself, if worse came to worse, I could try to start a romance with her. Who knows, with a little luck I might even score. I took a swim and then headed back to Huanquillo. It seemed to me that it wasn't in the cards for me to see that fabulous Sunday outdoor fair, after all. During the ride, my mind was on the UFO sighting. I knew what I'd seen in the sky was as real as the motorcycle I was riding. I even remembered very clearly seeing their shadows on the ground as they hovered above. I never thought I would be one of those people who see them flying saucers. It dawned on me that the girl had never told me her name nor where she came from. I knew nothing about her, yet we were supposed to have an open-minded conversation the next day. When I arrived in Huanquillo, I drove around the downtown area, stopping at several places, trying to find a Bible. I hit two bookstores. One was closed, the other didn't carry Bibles. I went to Richard's apartment. As soon as he saw me, he told me he had lined up the two American girls for a date that night. I accepted the invitation appreciatively, providing he helped me find a Bible first. I'll never forget the look on his face. He said he thought something was wrong with me first coming to Huanquillo alone, then this nonsense about finding a Bible on a Saturday evening just before a date. Since I didn't think the real reason would improve Richard's opinion about my state of mind, I made up a plausible reason why I wanted the Bible. He suggested we go see one of the local priests and try to borrow a Bible. The priest was warm and pleasant, but he was unwilling to lend us his Bible, even though there were several in the back room of the church where he received us. I tried persuasion, pleasant manners, charm, bribery. All to no avail. The priest wouldn't release one book. He excused himself, saying he was about to perform a religious ceremony. While he was getting into his ritual clothes, I put one of the Bibles under my heavy jacket. When he returned, we thanked him very kindly for his time and made our getaway as smoothly as possible with the contraband Bible. Later that evening, Richard and I went out to dinner with his friends. Later, we went back to Richard's apartment. When everyone was relaxed and comfort soft hyphen table with each other, I decided to tell them about the UFOs. The girls were interested and curious, but Richard took it as just one more account of such sightings. He said he'd never seen one himself, but lots of people in the Huanquillo area claimed to have seen some kind of UFO. His comments made me even more curious, and determined to go back to Acá and meet that girl again. To heck with the Sunday fair. The next morning, Richard and the girls were still sleeping when I left the house. I wrote a note saying I wouldn't return until later, but to enjoy the fair for me, I took Richard's bike, certain they would prefer to use the car. Chapter 3. My first meeting with Rama. A Sunday morning in Huanquillo was like being in the vicinity of Pasadena before the Rose Bowl parade. There were people everywhere. They'd come from many miles away, bringing their goods to the fair, much like the American flea markets. The people, who lived in the neighboring towns, were both manufacturers and buy soft hyphens. They meet here at the culmination of a week's work. There was an air of business and festivity mingling together to create a cheerful mood in that city. Seeing so many people on the street that early in the morning aroused my curiosity. I decided to browse around the fair for a while. I even bought a few things. Sometime after 10 o'clock, I headed for the Mound Soft Hyphentains. It didn't take much more than an hour to get to a car packed. I immediately headed for the medicinal springs to bathe as I had noticed how great I felt afterwards. Again, I spoke to someone at the pool who related stories about hopelessly ill people who traveled great distances to bathe in these volcanic springs and who had been cured of such formidable diseases as ulcers and cancer. I listened politely because the young man spoke with faith and sincerity, but to me his stories of miraculous healings were a little unbelievable. As I nodded and yesed, I was thinking about the girl I would meet here later. I began to feel nervous and anxious. The longer I waited, the more I just wanted to get it over with. I began considering several bizarre possibilities. After all, I knew nothing about this woman. What if she were a mental case? Or with the CIA? Or connected to some international smuggling operation involving drugs? The mafia, espionage. Even the Peace Corps was suspect, as it was sometimes used as a front for illegal activities. This place would be an ideal hideout for someone avoiding the law. She might even be a member of the Symbionese army, or the long-sought Patty Hearst, whose kidnap soft-ping had dominated the news recently. I tried to relax. So what if she were? She was nice, not bad-looking, had a good body, was certainly interesting enough. And she had left me with a good impression. She seemed sincere, open, straightforward, and ex-soft-trimmily self-confident. She didn't show the kind of underlying fear of someone who was being hunted by the police or mafia executioners. But the police motor soft-cycle bothered me. How could anybody manage to get away with riding around on something so obviously stolen without getting caught? Someone had to see it in over 11,000 miles of travel. This young lady was very mysterious indeed. And there was something strange about her deep, penetrating eyes. I was out of the water, feeling great, when she finally arrived. I didn't hear any cars, buses or her Harley Davidson to announce her arrival. We greeted each other. She seemed light-hearted and cheerful. I asked how she had gotten here. She said she had walked. She was wearing a white, one-piece robe-like garment with a light blue sash around the waist. Again, I was struck by the unusualness of this girl. By the way, I said casually, you never told me your name yesterday. Call me Rama, she said. What an unusual name. Thank you. What's yours? Charles. But my friends call me Chaco. Are you going to tell me where you came from? Please, let's not start that again. Look, I really don't care if you are the Queen of Sheba or Patty Hearst in disguise. But I'd like some answers to the questions I've been wrestling with for the last 24 hours. My first meeting with Rama. Well, I don't know you all that well yet, she answered, but once we get acquainted a little better, and if I think you're able to handle it, I'll tell you many interesting things. It's a deal. I see you were a good boy and brought your Bible. Well, isn't it nice to feel superior and teacher-like, I said sarcastically. It wasn't easy, but here it is. I held out the book. Uh-oh, this Bible is written in Spanish. That's okay with me, Rama said coolly. I speak Spanish, too. Rama's Spanish was more than good, it was great, fluent as any Peruvian native. Her proficiency in the language reawakened my suspicions. She had obviously had lots of training in Spanish. Maybe I had been right, she could be CIA, after all, in this part of South America, secret agents were not uncommon. She looked straight at me as these thoughts raced through my mind. Again I observed that strange Miss Soft-Terious stare. Then, with a Mona Lisa-like smile, she said, "Relax, I'm not with the CIA." Her comment startled me. How did you know what I was thinking? Again, the mysterious smile. Your eyes are giving you away. If I remember correctly, she said, you are here today because you are interested in UFOs. You're right, I said, turning my attention back to the Bible in my hand. What kind of relationship do you establish between the Bible and flying saucers? First of all, she began, let me remind you that this little book was written many thousands of years ago by many people whose names are familiar to you: Moses, King David, Solomon, Ezekiel, Daniel, Saint John, Saint Matthew, even the words of Christ are here. Yes, I recognize those names. Chaco, these were sober people who wrote of their personal experiences, as they happened to them. Some soft-tim they related events that happened to others. I'm sure you don't believe they were giving accounts of things they had only imagined, do you? No, I don't think so, I said. We must take into consideration that these people had to have some actual experiences in order to write their stories. And you have to realize that language changes over the years and that these accounts have been subject to different translations and many kinds of interpretations. This little book has been through the mill. Moses and Ezekiel did not use the words UFO, flying saucer or spaceship, because that type of terminology was unknown in their day, she explained, teacher-like. They called them thick clouds, pillars of fire, chariots of fire, and pillar of cloud. She was making some sense. I remained quiet and let her continue. All right, American Indian traditions also talk about the thunderbird, and the phoenix bird that rises from the flame to fly with its wings on fire. Let's say you are going to write about the launching of a spaceship from Cape Kennedy next week. You would use the term in all soft-oji available to you today. Thousands of years ago, you most likely would have used the words associated with flying and sound, using bird for flying and thunder for sound, thus creating the imagery of some object flying with a sound like thunder. Let's take for instance, chapter 19 of Exodus, written by Moses, verse 16. How do I find it? I asked. Just as in any other book, look at the index. I felt like an idiot, but I had never really read the Bible, except briefly in junior high school, when a few friends and I tried to get turned on by reading some erotic passages about King Solomon. Besides, the Bible had never held the same attraction for reading as Penthouse or Playboy magazines. I started to read aloud, Exodus 19, 16-19, and it came to pass on the third day in the morning, that there were thunders and lightnings, and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of Tyre trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long, and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. I stopped reading. Okay, hold up a minute, she said. What do you make out of these words, using simple logic? She looked straight into my eyes. If you think you need more background to understand it, remember the movie The Ten Commandments where Charlton Heston's soft-done plays Moses? The whole movie is about the book of Exodus. I remember, I saw the movie. Well, what do you make out of it? I reviewed the passage I'd just read. Okay, verse 16 talks about a thick cloud, light, and a blasting sound. The loud trumpet I can associate with the same kind of noise you hear at JFK International Airport after a TWA 727 or 747 has taxied down the runway and is about to turn off the engines. For some reason, they get louder before shutting off completely. In verse 18, the smoke could have been the result of an aircraft's propulsion system. I continued my recitation to my young teacher. The mountains quaking could be the echoing of the landing sounds. In verse 19, the voice of the trumpet might have been some sort of loudspeaker system. This whole conversation began to get too serious for my comfort, so I added playfully, and the burning, the smoke, was probably weeds, plants, or garbage like paper cups, fried chicken boxes, what have you, left by people after their coffee breaks. You're being funny, she said, laughing. But you're getting the idea. Now, look at Ezekiel. First chapter, verse 4. I began reading again, and I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof as the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. Just listen to the words. This is a descriptive or a soft hyphenation. The guy is just giving us a detailed account of what is happening. Take it from the very beginning, see his style descriptive. It's hard to refute after you read the whole thing. It doesn't seem possible that this man could have made it all up, or that he was dripping on some soft hyphen thing. Fine. I believe you. I believe what's in here. It makes a lot of sense. But why didn't they teach it that way in Hebrew school? We'll get to that later, she said. Let's get back to Exodus for now, chapter 13:19. Remember the part where the Jews get out of captivity in Egypt? Right. Then start reading from here.